Chapter 7. Morning on the Beach. It was mid-morning on the beach below the hotel. Evelyn Hillingdon came out of the water and dropped on the warm golden sand. She took off her bathing cap and shook her dark head vigorously. The beach was not a very big one. People tended to congregate there in the mornings, and about 11:30 there was always something of a social reunion. To Evelyn's left, in one of the exotic-looking modern basket chairs, lay Señora de Caspiaro, a handsome woman from Venezuela. Next to her was old Mr. Raphael, who was by now the doyen of the Golden Palm Hotel and held the sway that only an elderly invalid of great wealth could attain. Esther Walters was in attendance on him. She usually had her shorthand notebook and pencil with her in case Mr. Raphael should suddenly think of urgent business cables which must be got off at once. Mr. Raphael, in beach attire, was incredibly desiccated, his bones draped with festoons of dry skin. Though looking like a man on the point of death, he had looked exactly the same for at least the last 8 years, or so it was said in the islands. Sharp blue eyes peered out of his wrinkled cheeks, and his principal pleasure in life was denying robustly anything that anyone else said. Miss Marple was also present. As usual, she sat and knitted and listened to what went on, and very occasionally joined in the conversation. When she did so, everyone was surprised, because they had usually forgotten that she was there. Evelyn Hillingdon looked at her indulgently, and thought that she was a nice old pussy. Señora de Caspiaro rubbed some more oil on her long, beautiful legs and hummed to herself. She was not a woman who spoke much. She looked discontentedly at the flask of sun oil. "This is not so good as Frangipanio," she said sadly. "One cannot get it here. A pity." Her eyelids drooped again.
"Are you going in for your dip now, Mr. Raphael?" asked Esther Walters.
"I'll go in when I'm ready," said Mr. Raphael snappishly.
"It's 11:30, said Mrs. Walters.
"What of it?" said Mr. Raphael. "Think I'm the kind of man to be tired by the clock. Do this at the hour, do this at 20 minutes past, do that at 22.
Mrs. Walters had been in attendance on Mr. Raphael long enough to have adopted her own formula for dealing with him. She knew that he liked a good space of time in which to recover from the exertion of bathing, and she had therefore reminded him of the time, allowing a good 10 minutes for him to rebut her suggestion and then be able to adopt it without seeming to do so.
"I don't like these espadrilles,"
said Mr. Raphael, raising a foot and looking at it.
"I told that fool Jackson so. The man never pays attention to a word I say."
"I'll fetch you some others, shall I, Mr. Raphael?"
"No, you won't. You'll sit here and keep quiet. I hate people rushing about like clucking hens."
Evelyn shifted slightly in the warm sand, stretching out her arms. Miss Marple, intent on her knitting, or so it seemed, stretched out a foot. Then hastily she apologised.
"I'm so sorry, so very sorry, Mrs. Hillingdon. I'm afraid I kicked you."
"Oh, it's quite all right," said Evelyn. "This beach gets rather crowded."
"Oh, please don't move, please. I'll move my chair a little back so that I won't do it again."
As Miss Marple resettled herself, she went on talking in a childish and garrulous manner.
"It still seems so wonderful to be here. I've never been to the West Indies before, you know. I thought it was the kind of place I never should come to, and here I am, all by the kindness of my dear nephew. I suppose you know this part of the world very well, don't you, Mrs. Hillingdon?"
"I have been in this island once or twice before, and of course in most of the others."
"Oh, yes. Butterflies, isn't it, and wildflowers? You and your friends, or are they relations?"
"Friends, nothing more."
"And I suppose you go about together a great deal because of your interests being the same."
"Yes, we've travelled together for some years now."
"I suppose you must have had some rather exciting adventures sometimes."
"I don't think so," said Evelyn. Her voice was unaccentuated, slightly bored,
Adventures always seem to happen to other people. She yawned.
No dangerous encounters with snakes or with wild animals or with natives gone berserk?
What a fool I sound, thought Miss Marple. Nothing worse than insect bites, Evelyn assured her.
Poor Major Palgrave, you know, was bitten by a snake once, said Miss Marple, making a purely fictitious statement.
Was he?
Did he never tell you about it?
Perhaps. I don't remember.
I suppose you knew him quite well, didn't you?
Major Palgrave? No, hardly at all.
He always had so many interesting stories to tell.
Ghastly old bore, said Mr. Raphael. Silly fool, too. He needn't have died if he'd looked after himself properly.
Oh, come now, Mr. Raphael, said Mrs. Walters.
I know what I'm talking about. If you look after your health properly, you're all right anywhere. Look at me. The doctors gave me up years ago. All right, I said, I've got my own rules of health and I shall keep to them. And here I am.
He looked round, proudly. It did indeed seem rather a miracle that he should be there.
Poor Major Palgrave had high blood pressure, said Mrs. Walters.
Nonsense, said Mr. Raphael.
Oh, but he did, said Evelyn Hillingdon. She spoke with sudden, unexpected authority.
Who says so? Said Mr. Raphael. Did he tell you so?
Somebody said so.
He looked very red in the face, Miss Marple contributed.
Can't go by that, said Mr. Raphael. And anyway, he didn't have high blood pressure because he told me so.
What do you mean, he told you so? Said Mrs. Walters. I mean, you can't exactly tell a person you haven't got a thing.
Yes, you can. I said to him once when he was downing all those planter's punches and eating too much, I said, you ought to watch your diet and your drink. You've got to think of your blood pressure at your age. And he said he'd nothing to look out for in that line, that his blood pressure was very good for his age.
But he took some stuff for it, I believe, said Miss Marple, entering the conversation once more. Some stuff called, oh, something like, was it serenite?
If you ask me, said Evelyn Hillingdon, I don't think he ever liked to admit that there could be anything the matter with him, or that he could be ill. I think he was one of those people who are afraid of illness, and therefore deny there's ever anything wrong with them.
It was a long speech for her. Miss Marple looked thoughtfully down at the top of her dark head.
The trouble is, said Mr. Raphael dictatorially, everybody's too fond of knowing other people's ailments. They think everybody over 50 is going to die of hypertension or coronary thrombosis or one of those things. Poppycock! If a man says there's nothing much wrong with him, I don't suppose there is. A man ought to know about his own health. What's the time? 11:45? I ought to have had my dip long ago. Why can't you remind me about these things, Esther?
Mrs. Walters made no protest. She rose to her feet and, with some deftness, assisted Mr. Raphael to his. Together they went down the beach, she supporting him carefully. Together they stepped into the sea.
Signora de Caspiaro opened her eyes and murmured,
"How ugly are old men! Oh, how they are ugly! They should all be put to death at 40. Or perhaps 35 would be better, yes?"
Edward Hillingdon and Gregory Dyson came crunching down the beach.
"What's the water like, Evelyn?"
"Just the same as always."
"Never much variation, is there?"
"Where's Lucky?"
"I don't know," said Evelyn. Again Miss Marple looked down thoughtfully at the dark head.
"Well now, I give my imitation of a whale," said Gregory.
He threw off his gaily patterned Bermuda shirt and tore down the beach, flinging himself, puffing and panting, into the sea, doing a fast crawl. Edward Hillingdon sat down on the beach by his wife. Presently he asked,
"Coming in again?"
She smiled, put on her cap, and they went down the beach together in a much less spectacular manner. Signora de Caspiaro opened her eyes again.
"I think at first those two, they are on their honeymoon. He is so charming to her. But I hear they have been married 8, 9 years. It is incredible, is it not?"
"I wonder where Mrs. Dyson is," said Miss Marple.
That Lucky? She's with some man.
You think so?
It is certain, said Signora de Caspiaro. She is that type. But she is not so young any longer. Her husband, already his eyes go elsewhere. He makes passes, here, there, all the time.
I know.
Yes, said Miss Marple. I expect you would know.
Signora de Caspiaro shot a surprised glance at her. It was clearly not what she had expected from that quarter. Miss Marple, however, was looking at the waves with an air of gentle innocence.
May I speak to you, ma'am, Mrs. Kendall?
Yes, of course, said Molly. She was sitting at her desk in the office.
Victoria Johnson, tall and buoyant in her crisp white uniform, came in further and shut the door behind her with a somewhat mysterious air.
I'd like to tell you something, please, Mrs. Kendall.
Yes? What is it? Is anything wrong?
I don't know that, not for sure. It's the old gentleman who died, the major gentleman. He die in his sleep.
Yes, yes. What about it?
There was a bottle of pills in his room. Doctor, he asked me about them.
Yes?
The doctor said, let me see what he has here on the bathroom shelf. And he looked, you see. He see there was tooth powder and indigestion pills and aspirin and cascara pills and then these pills in a bottle called serenite.
Yes, repeated Molly yet again.
And the doctor looked at him. He seemed quite satisfied and nodded his head. But I get to thinking afterwards, those pills weren't there before. I've not seen them in his bathroom before. The others, yes, the tooth powder and the aspirin and the aftershave lotion and all the rest. But those pills, those serenite pills, I never noticed them before.
So you think... Molly looked puzzled.
I don't know what to think, said Victoria. I just think it's not right, so I think I'd better tell you about it. Perhaps you tell doctor. Perhaps it means something. Perhaps someone put those pills there, so he take them and he died.
Oh, I don't think that's likely at all, said Molly.
Victoria shook her dark head.
You never know. People do bad things.
Molly glanced out of the window. The place looked like an earthly paradise, with its sunshine, its sea, its coral reef, its music, its dancing. It seemed a Garden of Eden. But even in the Garden of Eden there had been a shadow, the shadow of the serpent.
Bad things. How hateful to hear those words.
I'll make inquiries, Victoria, she said sharply. Don't worry, and above all, don't go starting a lot of silly rumours.
Tim Kendall came in just as Victoria was, somewhat unwillingly, leaving.
Anything wrong, Molly?
She hesitated, but Victoria might go to him. She told him what the girl had said.
I don't see what all this rigmarole... What were these pills, anyway?
Well, I don't really know, Tim. Dr. Robertson, when he came, said they were something to do with blood pressure, I think.
Well, that would be all right, wouldn't it? I mean, he had high blood pressure, and he would be taking things for it, wouldn't he? People do. I've seen them lots of times.
Yes, Molly hesitated. But Victoria seemed to think that he might have taken one of these pills, and it would have killed him.
Oh, darling, that is a bit too melodramatic. You mean that somebody might have changed his blood pressure pills for something else, and that they poisoned him?
It does sound absurd, said Molly apologetically, when you say it like that. But that seemed to be what Victoria thought.
Silly girl. We could go and ask Dr. Graham about it. I suppose he'd know. But really, it's such nonsense that it's not worth bothering him.
Well, that's what I think.
What on earth made the girl think anybody would have changed the pills? You mean, put different pills into the same bottle?
I didn't quite gather, said Molly, looking rather helpless. Victoria seemed to think that was the first time that serenite bottle had been there.
Oh, but that's nonsense, said Tim Kendall. He had to take those pills all the time to keep his blood pressure down.
And he went off, cheerfully, to consult with Fernando, the maitre d'hotel. But Molly could not dismiss the matter so lightly. After the stress of lunch was over, she said to her husband,
Tim, I've been thinking. If Victoria is going around talking about this, perhaps we ought just to ask someone about it.
My dear girl, Robertson and all the rest of them came and looked at everything and asked all the questions they wanted at the time.
Yes, but you know how they work themselves up, these girls.
Oh, all right. I tell you what, we'll go and ask Graham. He'll know.
Dr. Graham was sitting on his loggia with a book. The young couple came in, and Molly plunged into her recital. It was a little incoherent, and Tim took over.
"Sounds rather idiotic," he said apologetically. "But as far as I can make out, this girl has got it into her head that someone put poison tablets in the—what's the name of the stuff? Sarah-something bottle."
"But why should she get this idea into her head?" asked Dr. Graham. "Did she see anything or hear anything or—I mean, why should she think so?"
"I don't know," said Tim rather helplessly. "Was it a different bottle? Was that it, Molly?"
"No," said Molly. "I think what she said was that there was a bottle there labelled 7-Seren."
"Serenite," said the doctor. "That's quite right, a well-known preparation. He'd been taking it regularly."
"Victoria said she'd never seen it in his room before."
"Never seen it in his room before?" said Graham sharply. "What does she mean by that?"
"Well, that's what she said. She said there were all sorts of things on the bathroom shelf. You know, tooth powder, aspirin and aftershave and... Oh, she rattled them off gaily. I suppose she's always cleaning them, and so she knows them all off by heart. But this one, the Serenite, she hadn't seen it there until the day after he died."
"That's very odd," said Dr. Graham rather sharply. "Is she sure?"
The unusual sharpness of his tone made both of the Kendalls look at him. They had not expected Dr. Graham to take quite this attitude.
"She sounded sure," said Molly slowly.
"Perhaps she just wanted to be sensational," suggested Tim.
"I think perhaps," said Dr. Graham, "I'd better have a few words with the girl myself."
Victoria displayed a distinct pleasure at being allowed to tell her story.
"I don't want to get in no trouble," she said. "I didn't put that bottle there, and I don't know who did."
"But you think it was put there?" asked Graham.
"Well, you see, Doctor, it must have been put there if it wasn't there before."
"Major Palgrave could have kept it in a drawer or a dispatch case, something like that."
Victoria shook her head shrewdly.
"Wouldn't do that if he was taking it all the time, would he?"
"No," said Graham reluctantly. "No, it was stuff he would have to take several times a day. You never saw him taking it or anything of that kind?"
"He didn't have it there before. I just thought word got round as that stuff had something to do with his death, poisoned his blood or something, and I thought maybe he had an enemy put it there so as to kill him."
"Nonsense, my girl," said the doctor robustly. "Sheer nonsense."
Victoria looked shaken.
"You say as this stuff was medicine? Good medicine?" she asked doubtfully.
"Good medicine. And what is more, necessary medicine," said Dr. Graham. "So you needn't worry, Victoria. I can assure you there was nothing wrong with that medicine. It was the proper thing for a man to take who had his complaint."
"Surely you've taken a load off my mind," said Victoria.
She showed white teeth at him in a cheerful smile. But the load was not taken off Dr. Graham's mind. That uneasiness of his that had been so nebulous was now becoming tangible. Chapter 8. A Talk with Esther Walters.
"This place isn't what it used to be," said Mr. Raphael irritably, as he observed Miss Marple approaching the spot where he and his secretary were sitting. "Can't move a step without some old hen getting under your feet. What do old ladies want to come to the West Indies for?"
"Where do you suggest they should go?" asked Esther Walters.
"To Cheltenham," said Mr. Raphael promptly. "Or Bournemouth," he offered. "Or Torquay. Or Llandrin Dod Wells. Plenty of choice. They like it there. They're quite happy."
"They can't often afford to come to the West Indies, I suppose," said Esther.
It isn't everyone who is as lucky as you are.
That's right, said Mr. Raphael. Rub it in. Here am I, a mass of aches and pains and disjoints. You grudge me any alleviation. And you don't do any work. Why haven't you typed out those letters yet?
I haven't had time.
Well, get on with it, can't you? I bring you out here to do a bit of work, not to sit about sunning yourself and showing off your figure.
Some people would have considered Mr. Raphael's remarks quite insupportable, but Esther Walters had worked for him for some years, and she knew well enough that Mr. Raphael's bark was a great deal worse than his bite. He was a man who suffered almost continual pain, and making disagreeable remarks was one of his ways of letting off steam. No matter what he said, she remained quite imperturbable. "Such a lovely evening, isn't it?" said Miss Marple, pausing beside them.
"Why not?" said Mr. Raphael. "That's what we're here for, isn't it?"
Miss Marple gave a tinkly little laugh.
"You're so severe. Of course, the weather is a very English subject of conversation. One forgets." "Oh, dear, this is the wrong coloured wool."
She deposited her knitting bag on the garden table and trotted towards her own bungalow.
"Jackson!" yelled Mr. Raphael.
Jackson appeared.
"Take me back inside," said Mr. Raphael. "I'll have my massage now before that chattering hen comes back. Not that massage does me a bit of good," he added.
Having said which, he allowed himself to be deftly helped to his feet and went off with the masseur beside him into his bungalow. Esther Walters looked after them and then turned her head as Miss Marple came back with a ball of wool to sit down near her.
"I hope I'm not disturbing you," said Miss Marple.
"Of course not," said Esther Walters. "I've got to go off and do some typing in a minute, but I'm going to enjoy another 10 minutes of the sunset first." Miss Marple sat down and in a gentle voice began to talk. As she talked, she summed up Esther Walters. Not at all glamorous, but could be attractive-looking if she tried. Miss Marple wondered why she didn't try. It could be, of course, because Mr. Raphael would not have liked it. But Miss Marple didn't think Mr. Raphael would really mind in the least. He was so completely taken up with himself that so long as he was not personally neglected, his secretary might have got herself up like a houri in paradise without his objecting. Besides, he usually went to bed early, and in the evening hours of steel bands and dancing, Esther Walters might easily have... Miss Marple paused to select a word in her mind, at the same time conversing carefully about her visit to Jamestown. Ah, yes, blossomed. Esther Walters might have blossomed in the evening hours. She led the conversation gently in the direction of Jackson. On the subject of Jackson, Esther Walters was rather vague. "He's very competent," she said. "A fully trained masseur."
"I suppose he's been with Mr. Raphael a long time."
"Oh, no, about 9 months, I think."
"Is he married?" Miss Marple hazarded.
"Married? I don't think so," said Esther, slightly surprised. "He's never mentioned it, if so." "No," she added. "Definitely not married, I should say." And she showed amusement. Miss Marple interpreted that by adding to it in her own mind the following sentence: "At any rate, he doesn't behave as though he were married." But then how many married men there were who behaved as though they weren't married? Miss Marple could think of a dozen examples.
"He's quite good-looking," she said thoughtfully.
"Yes, I suppose he is," said Esther, without interest. Miss Marple considered her thoughtfully. Uninterested in men? The kind of woman, perhaps, who was only interested in one man. "A widow," they had said. She asked,
"Have you worked for Mr. Raphael long?"
4 or 5 years. After my husband died, I had to take a job again. I've got a daughter at school, and my husband left me very badly off."
"Mr. Raphael must be a difficult man to work for," Miss Marple hazarded.
"Not really, when you get to know him. He flies into rages and is very contradictory.
I think the real trouble is he gets tired of people. He's had 5 different valet attendants in 2 years. He likes having someone new to bully. But he and I have always got on very well. Mr. Jackson seems a very obliging young man. He's very tactful and resourceful, said Esther. Of course, he's sometimes a little... She broke off. Miss Marple considered.
Rather a difficult position sometimes, she suggested.
Well, yes, neither one thing nor the other. However, she smiled, I think he manages to have quite a good time. Miss Marple considered this also. It didn't help her much. She continued her twittering conversation, and soon she was hearing a good deal about that nature-loving quartet, the Dysons and the Hillingdons. The Hillingdons have been here for the last 3 or 4 years at least, said Esther. But Gregory Dyson has been here much longer than that. He knows the West Indies very well. He came here originally, I believe, with his first wife. She was delicate and had to go abroad in the winters, or go somewhere warm at any rate.
And she died? Or was it divorce?
No, she died. Out here, I believe. I don't mean this particular island, but one of the West Indies islands. There was some sort of trouble, I believe. Some kind of scandal or other. He never talks about her. Somebody else told me about it. They didn't, I gather, get on very well together.
And then he married this wife, Lucky.
Miss Marple said the word with faint dissatisfaction, as if to say, really, a most incredible name.
I believe she was a relation of his first wife.
Have they known the Hillingdons a great many years?
Oh, I think only since the Hillingdons came out here. 3 or 4 years, not more.
The Hillingdons seem very pleasant, said Miss Marple.
Quiet, of course.
Yes, they're both quiet.
Everyone says they're very devoted to each other,
said Miss Marple. The tone of her voice was quite non-committal, but Esther Walters looked at her sharply.
But you don't think they are, she said.
You don't really think so yourself, do you, my dear?
Well, I've wondered sometimes.
Quiet men like Colonel Hillingdon, said Miss Marple, are often attracted to flamboyant types.
And she added, after a significant pause,
Lucky, such a curious name. Do you think Mr. Dyson has any idea of what might be going on?
Old scandalmonger, thought Esther Walters. Really, these old women. She said rather coldly, I've no idea. Miss Marple shifted to another subject.
It's very sad about poor Major Palgrave, isn't it? She said.
Esther Walters agreed, though in a somewhat perfunctory fashion. The people I'm really sorry for are the Kendalls, she said.
Yes, I suppose it is really rather unfortunate when something of that kind happens in a hotel.
People come here, you see, to enjoy themselves, don't they? Said Esther. To forget about illnesses and deaths and income tax and frozen pipes and all the rest of it. They don't like... She went on with a sudden flash of an entirely different manner. Any reminders of mortality? Miss Marple laid down her knitting.
"Now, that is very well put, my dear," she said. "Very well put indeed. Yes, it is as you say."
"And you see, they're quite a young couple," went on Esther Walters. "They only just took over from the Sandersons 6 months ago, and they're terribly worried about whether they're going to succeed or not, because they haven't had much experience.
And you think this might be really disadvantageous to them?"
"Well, no, I don't, frankly," said Esther Walters. I don't think people remember anything for more than a day or two. Not in this atmosphere of, we've all come out here to enjoy ourselves, let's get on with it.
I think a death just gives them a jolt for about 24 hours or so, and then they don't think of it again once the funeral is over.
Not unless they're reminded of it, that is.
I've told Molly so, but of course she is a worrier. Mrs. Kendall is a worrier? She always seems so carefree.
I think... A lot of that is put on, said Esther slowly. Actually, I think she's one of those anxious sort of people who can't help worrying all the time that things may go wrong.
I should have thought he worried more than she did.
No, I don't think so. I think she's the worrier,
and he worries because she worries, if you know what I mean.
That is interesting, said Miss Marple.
I think Molly wants desperately to try and appear very gay and to be enjoying herself. She works at it very hard, but the effort exhausts her. Then she has these odd fits of depression. She's not really well balanced.
Poor child, said Miss Marple. There certainly are people like that, and very often outsiders don't suspect it.
No, they put on such a good show, don't they? However, Esther added, I don't think Molly has really anything to worry about in this case. I mean, people are dying of coronary thrombosis or cerebral hemorrhage or things of that kind all the time nowadays. Far more than they used to, as far as I can see. It's only food poisoning or typhoid or something like that that makes people get het up.
Major Palgrave never mentioned to me that he had high blood pressure, said Miss Marple. Did he to you?
He said so to somebody. I don't know who. It may have been to Mr. Raphael. I know Mr. Raphael says just the opposite, but then he's like that.
Certainly Jackson mentioned it to me once. He said the Major ought to be more careful over the alcohol he took.
I see, said Miss Marple thoughtfully. She went on, I expect you found him rather a boring old man. He told a lot of stories, and I expect repeated himself a good deal.
That's the worst of it, said Esther. You do hear the same story again and again, unless you can manage to be quick enough to fend it off.
Of course, I didn't mind so much, said Miss Marple, because I'm used to that sort of thing. If I get stories told to me rather often, I don't really mind hearing them again, because I've usually forgotten them.
There is that, said Esther, and laughed cheerfully.
There was one story he was very fond of telling, said Miss Marple, about a murder. I expect he told you that, didn't he?
Esther Walters opened her handbag and started searching through it. She drew out her lipstick, saying, oh, I thought I'd lost it. Then she asked, I beg your pardon, what did you say?
I asked if Major Palgrave told you his favourite murder story.
I believe he did, now that I come to think of it. Something about someone who gassed themselves, wasn't it? Only really it was the wife who gassed him. I mean, she'd given him a sedative of some kind and then stuck his head in the gas oven. Was that it?
I don't think that was exactly it, said Miss Marple.
She looked at Esther Walters thoughtfully.
He told such a lot of stories, said Esther Walters apologetically. And as I said, one didn't always listen.
He had a snapshot, said Miss Marple, that he used to show people.
I believe he did. I can't remember what it was now. Did he show it to you?
No, said Miss Marple. He didn't show it to me. We were interrupted.
Chapter 9. Miss Prescott and Others.
The story I heard, began Miss Prescott, lowering her voice and looking carefully around. Miss Marple drew her chair a little closer. It had been some time before she had been able to get together with Miss Prescott for a heart-to-heart chat. This was owing to the fact that clergymen are very strong family men, so that Miss Prescott was nearly always accompanied by her brother, and there was no doubt that Miss Marple and Miss Prescott found it less easy to take their back hair down in a good gossip when the jovial canon was of their company.
It seems, said Miss Prescott, though of course I don't want to talk any scandal, and I really know nothing about it.
Oh, I quite understand, said Miss Marple.
It seems there was some scandal when his first wife was still alive. Apparently this woman, Lucky, such a name, who I think was a cousin of his first wife, came out here and joined them, and I think did some work with him on flowers or butterflies or whatever it was, and people talked a lot because they got on so well together, if you know what I mean.
People do notice things so much, don't they? Said Miss Marple.
And then, of course, when his wife died rather suddenly, she died here on this island.
No, no, I think they were in Martinique or Tobago at the time.
I see.
But I gathered from some other people who were there at the time and who came on here and talked about things that the doctor wasn't very satisfied.
Indeed, said Miss Marple with interest.
It was only gossip, of course, but, well, Mr. Dyson certainly married again very quickly.
She lowered her voice again.
Only a month, I believe.
Only a month, said Miss Marple. The two women looked at each other.
It seemed unfeeling, said Miss Prescott.
Yes, said Miss Marple, it certainly did. She added delicately, was there any money?
I don't really know. He makes his little joke, perhaps you've heard him, about his wife being his lucky piece.
Yes, I've heard him, said Miss Marple.
And some people think that means he was lucky to marry a rich wife.
Though, of course, said Miss Prescott, with the air of one being entirely fair, she's very good-looking, too, if you care for that type.
And I think myself that it was the first wife who had the money.
Are the Hillingdons well off?
Well, I think they're well off. I don't mean fabulously rich. I just mean well off. They have two boys at public school and a very nice place in England, I believe, and they travel most of the winter.
The cannon appearing at this moment to suggest a brisk walk, Miss Prescott rose to join her brother. Miss Marple remained sitting there. A few minutes later, Gregory Dyson passed her, striding along towards the hotel. He waved a cheerful hand as he passed. "Penny for your thoughts," he called out. Miss Marple smiled gently, wondering how he would have reacted if she had replied, "I was wondering if you were a murderer." It really seemed most probable that he was.
It all fitted in so nicely. This story about the death of the first Mrs. Dyson.
Major Palgrave had certainly been talking about a wife-killer, with special reference to the Brides in the Bath case.
Yes, it fitted.
The only objection was that it fitted almost too well. But Miss Marple reproved herself for this thought. Who was she to demand murders made to measure? A voice made her jump, a somewhat raucous one.
"Seen Greg any place, Miss Sir?"
Lucky, Miss Marple thought, was not in a good temper.
"He passed by just now, going towards the hotel."
"I'll bet."
Lucky uttered an irritated ejaculation and hurried on. 40 if she's a day, and looks it this morning, thought Miss Marple. Pity invaded her. Pity for the Luckies of the world who were so vulnerable to time. At the sound of a noise behind her, she turned her chair round. Mr. Raphael, supported by Jackson, was making his morning appearance and coming out of his bungalow. Jackson settled his employer in his wheelchair and fussed round him. Mr. Raphael waved his attendant away impatiently, and Jackson went off in the direction of the hotel. Miss Marple lost no time. Mr. Raphael was never left alone for long. Probably Esther Walters would come and join him. Miss Marple wanted a word alone with Mr. Raphael, and now, she thought, was her chance. She would have to be quick about what she wanted to say. There could be no leading up to things. Mr. Raphael was not a man who cared for the idle, twittering conversation of old ladies. He would probably retreat again into his bungalow, definitely regarding himself the victim of persecution. Miss Marple decided to plump for downrightness. She made her way to where he was sitting, drew up a chair, sat down, and said,
"I want to ask you something, Mr. Raphael."
All right, said Mr. Raphael. "Let's have it. What do you want? A subscription, I suppose? Missions in Africa or repairing a church, something of that kind?"
"Yes," said Miss Marple. "I am interested in several objects of that nature, and I shall be delighted if you will give me a subscription for them. But that wasn't actually what I was going to ask you. What I was going to ask you was if Major Palgrave ever told you a story about a murder."
"Oh-ho," said Mr. Raphael. "So he told it to you too, did he? And I suppose you fell for it, hook, line and sinker."
"I didn't really know what to think," said Miss Marple. "What exactly did he tell you?"
"He prattled on," said Mr. Raphael, "about a lovely creature, Lucrezia Borgia reincarnated. Beautiful, young, golden-haired, everything."
Oh, said Miss Marple, slightly taken aback. And who did she murder?
Her husband, of course, said Mr. Raphael. Who do you think?
Poison?
No, I think she gave him a sleeping draught and then stuck him in a gas oven. Resourceful female. Then she said it was suicide. She got off, quite likely. Diminished responsibility or something. That's what it's called nowadays if you're a good-looking woman or some miserable young hooligan whose mother's been too fond of him. Bah!
Did the Major show you a snapshot?
What, a snapshot of the woman? No, why should he?
Oh, said Miss Marple. She sat there, rather taken aback. Apparently Major Palgrave spent his life telling people not only about tigers he had shot and elephants he had hunted, but also about murderers he had met. Perhaps he had a whole repertoire of murder stories. One had to face it.
She was startled by Mr. Raphael suddenly giving a roar of,
"Jackson!"
There was no response.
"Shall I find him for you?" said Miss Marple, rising.
"You won't find him. Tomcatting somewhere, that's what he does. No good, that fellow. Bad character. But he suits me all right."
"I'll go and look for him," said Miss Marple.
Miss Marple found Jackson sitting on the far side of the hotel terrace having a drink with Tim Kendall.
"Mr. Raphael is asking for you," she said.
Jackson made an expressive grimace, drained his glass and rose to his feet.
"Here we go again," he said. "No peace for the wicked. 2 telephone calls and a special diet order. I thought that might give me a quarter of an hour's alibi. Apparently not. Thank you, Miss Marple." "Thanks for the drink, Mr. Kendall."
He strode away.
"I feel sorry for that chap," said Tim. "I have to stand him a drink now and then just to cheer him up. Can I offer you something, Miss Marple? How about fresh lime? I know you're fond of that."
"Not just now, thank you. I suppose looking after someone like Mr. Raphael must always be rather exacting. Invalids are frequently difficult."
"I didn't mean only that. It's very well paid, and you expect to put up with a good deal of crotchetiness. Old Raphael's not really a bad sort. I meant more that..."
He hesitated. Miss Marple looked inquiring.
"Well, how shall I put it? It's difficult for him socially. People are so damned snobbish. There's no one here of his class. He's better than a servant and below the average visitor, or they think he is. Rather like the Victorian governess. Even the secretary woman, Mrs. Walters, feels she's a cut above him. Makes things difficult."
Tim paused, then said, with feeling,
"It's really awful, the amount of social problems there are in a place like this."
Dr. Graham passed them. He had a book in his hand. He went and sat at a table overlooking the sea.
"Dr. Graham looks rather worried," remarked Miss Marple.
"Oh, we're all worried."
"You too, because of Major Palgrave's death."
"I've left off worrying about that. People seem to have forgotten it, taken it in their stride. No, it's my wife, Molly. Do you know anything about dreams?"
"Dreams?" Miss Marple was surprised.
"Yes, bad dreams. Nightmares, I suppose. Oh, we all get that sort of thing sometimes. But Molly, she seems to have them nearly all the time. They frighten her. Is there anything one can do about them, take for them? She's got some sleeping pills, but she says they make it worse. She struggles to wake up and can't."
"What are the dreams about?"
"Oh, something or someone chasing her, or watching her and spying on her. She can't shake off the feeling, even when she's awake."
"Surely a doctor..."
"She's got a thing against doctors. Won't hear of it." "Oh, well, I dare say it will all pass off. But we were so happy. It was all such fun. And now, just lately, perhaps old Palgrave's death upset her. She seems like a different person since."
He got up.
"Must get on with the daily chores. Are you sure you won't have that fresh lime?"
Miss Marple shook her head. She sat there, thinking. Her face was grave and anxious. She glanced over at Dr. Graham. Presently, she came to a decision. She rose and went across to his table.
"I have got to apologise to you, Dr. Graham," she said.
"Indeed?"
The doctor looked at her in kindly surprise. He pulled forward a chair and she sat down.
I'm afraid I have done the most disgraceful thing, said Miss Marple. I told you, Dr. Graham, a deliberate lie.
She looked at him apprehensively.
Dr. Graham did not look at all shattered, but he did look a little surprised.
Really? He said.
Ah, well, you mustn't let that worry you too much.
What had the dear old thing been telling lies about, he wondered. Her age? Though as far as he could remember, she hadn't mentioned her age. Well, let's hear about it, he said, since she clearly wished to confess.
You remember my speaking to you about a snapshot of my nephew, one that I showed to Major Palgrave, and that he didn't give back to me?
Yes, yes, of course I remember. Sorry we couldn't find it for you.
There wasn't any such thing, said Miss Marple, in a small, frightened voice.
I beg your pardon?
There wasn't any such thing. I made up that story, I'm afraid.
You made it up?
Dr. Graham looked slightly annoyed.
Why?
Miss Marple told him. She told him quite clearly, without twittering. She told him about Major Palgrave's murder story, and how he'd been about to show her this particular snapshot, and his sudden confusion, and then she went on to her own anxiety and to her final decision to try, somehow, to obtain a view of it.
And really, I couldn't see any way of doing so without telling you something that was quite untrue, she said. I do hope you will forgive me.
You thought that what he'd been about to show you was a picture of a murderer?
That's what he said it was, said Miss Marple. At least, he said it was given him by this acquaintance who had told him the story about a man who was a murderer.
Yes, yes, and excuse me, you believed him?
I don't know if I really believed him or not at the time, said Miss Marple. But then, you see, the next day he died.
Yes, said Dr. Graham, struck suddenly by the clarity of that one sentence. The next day he died.
And the snapshot had disappeared.
Dr. Graham looked at her. He didn't know quite what to say.
Excuse me, Miss Marple, he said at last, but is what you're telling me now, is it really true this time?
I don't wonder you're doubting me, said Miss Marple. I should, in your place. Yes, it is true what I'm telling you now. But I quite realize that you have only my word for it. Still, even if you don't believe me, I thought I ought to tell you.
Why?
I realized that you ought to have the fullest information possible, in case...
In case what?
In case you decided to take any steps about it.
Chapter 10. A Decision in Jamestown. Dr. Graham was in Jamestown, in the administrator's office, sitting at a table opposite his friend Daventry, a grave young man of 35.
"You sounded rather mysterious on the phone, Graham," said Daventry. "Anything special the matter?"
"I don't know," said Dr. Graham, "but I'm worried."
Daventry looked at the other's face. Then he nodded as drinks were brought in. He spoke lightly of a fishing expedition he'd made lately. Then, when the servant had gone away, he sat back in his chair and looked at the other man.
"Now then," he said, "let's have it."
Dr. Graham recounted the facts that had worried him. Daventry gave a slow, long whistle.
"I see. You think maybe there's something funny about old Palgrave's death. You're no longer sure that it was just natural causes. Who certified the death?
Robertson, I suppose. He didn't have any doubts, did he?"
"No, but I think he may have been influenced in giving the certificate by the fact of the serenite tablets in the bathroom. He asked me if Palgrave had mentioned that he suffered from hypertension, and I said no, I'd never had any medical conversation with him myself. But apparently he had talked about it to other people in the hotel. The whole thing, the bottle of tablets and what Palgrave had said to people, it all fitted in. No earthly reason to suspect anything else. It was a perfectly natural inference to make, but I think now it may not have been correct. If it had been my business to give the certificate, I'd have given it without a second thought. The appearances are quite consistent with his having died from that cause.
I'd never have thought about it since if it hadn't been for the odd disappearance of that snapshot.
But look here, Graham, said Daventry. If you will allow me to say so, aren't you relying a little too much on a rather fanciful story told you by an elderly lady? You know what these elderly ladies are like. They magnify some small detail and work the whole thing up.
Yes, I know, said Dr. Graham, unhappily. I know that. I've said to myself that it may be so, that it probably is so. But I can't quite convince myself. She was so very clear and detailed in her statement.
The whole thing seems wildly improbable to me, said Daventry. Some old lady tells a story about a snapshot that ought not to be there.
No, I'm getting mixed up myself. I mean the other way about, don't I?
But the only thing you've really got to go on is that a chambermaid says that a bottle of pills which the authorities had relied on for evidence wasn't in the major's room the day before his death. But there are 100 explanations for that. He might always have carried those pills about in his pocket.
It's possible, I suppose, yes.
Or the chambermaid may have made a mistake and she simply hadn't noticed them before.
That's possible, too.
Well, then,
Graham said slowly, the girl was very positive.
Well, the St. Honoré people are very excitable, you know, emotional, work themselves up easily. Are you thinking that she knows a little more than she had said?
I think it might be so, said Dr. Graham slowly.
You'd better try and get it out of her, if so. We don't want to make an unnecessary fuss, unless we've something definite to go on. If he didn't die of blood pressure, what do you think it was?
There are too many things it might be nowadays, said Dr. Graham.
You mean things that don't leave recognisable traces?
Not everyone, said Dr. Graham dryly, is so considerate as to use arsenic.
Now, let's get things quite clear. What's the suggestion? That a bottle of pills was substituted for the real ones, and that Major Palgrave was poisoned in that way?
No, it's not like that. That's what the girl, Victoria something, thinks. But she's got it all wrong. If it was decided to get rid of the Major quickly, he would have been given something, most likely, in a drink of some kind. Then, to make it appear a natural death, a bottle of the tablets prescribed to relieve blood pressure was put in his room, and the rumour was put about that he suffered from high blood pressure.
Who put the rumour about?
I've tried to find out, with no success. It's been too cleverly done. A says, I think B told me. B, asked, says, no, I didn't say so, but I remember C mentioning it one day. C says, several people talked about it. One of them, I think, was A. And there we are, back again.
Someone was clever.
Yes. As soon as the death was discovered, everybody seemed to be talking about the Major's high blood pressure and repeating round what other people had said.
Wouldn't it have been simpler just to poison him and let it go at that?
No, that might have meant inquiry, possibly an autopsy. This way a doctor would accept the death and give a certificate, as he did.
What do you want me to do? Go to the CID? Suggest they dig the chap up? It'd make a lot of stink.
It could be kept quite quiet. Could it? In Saint Honoré? Think again. The grapevine would be on to it before it had happened.
All the same, Daventry sighed, I suppose we'll have to do something. But if you ask me, it's all a mare's nest.
I devoutly hope it is, said Dr. Graham.
Chapter 11 Evening at the Golden Palm. Molly rearranged a few of the table decorations in the dining room, removed an extra knife, straightened a fork, reset a glass or two, stood back to look at the effect, and then walked out onto the terrace outside. There was no one about just at present, and she strolled to the far corner and stood by the balustrade. Soon another evening would begin, chattering, talking, drinking, all so gay and carefree, the sort of life she had longed for, and, up to a few days ago, had enjoyed so much. Now even Tim seemed anxious and worried.
natural, perhaps, that he should worry a little. It was important that this venture of theirs should turn out all right. After all, he had sunk all he had in it. But that, thought Molly, is not really what's worrying him. It's me. But I don't see, said Molly to herself, why he should worry about me. Because he did worry about her, that she was quite sure of. The questions he put, the quick, nervous glance he shot at her from time to time. But why, thought Molly, I've been very careful. She summed up things in her mind. She didn't understand it really herself. She couldn't remember when it had begun. She wasn't even very sure what it was. She'd begun to be frightened of people. She didn't know why. What could they do to her? What should they want to do to her? She nodded her head, then started violently as a hand touched her arm. She spun round to find Gregory Dyson, slightly taken aback, looking apologetic.
"Ever so sorry, did I startle you, little girl?"
Molly hated being called little girl. She said quickly and brightly, "I didn't hear you coming, Mr. Dyson, so it made me jump."
"Mr. Dyson? We're very formal tonight. Aren't we all one great happy family here? Ed and me and Lucky and Evelyn and you and Tim and Esther Walters and old Raphael. All the lot of us, one happy family."
He's had plenty to drink already, thought Molly. She smiled at him pleasantly. "Oh, I come over the heavy hostess sometimes," she said lightly. "Tim and I think it's more polite not to be too handy with Christian names."
"Oh, we don't want any of that stuffed shirt business. Now then, Molly, my lovely, have a drink with me?"
"Ask me later," said Molly. "I have a few things to get on with."
"Now, don't run away."
His arms fastened round her arm.
"You're a lovely girl, Molly. I hope Tim appreciates his good luck."
"Oh, I see to it that he does," said Molly cheerfully.
"I could go for you, you know, in a big way." He leered at her, "though I wouldn't let my wife hear me say so."
"Did you have a good trip this afternoon?"
"I suppose so. Between you and me, I get a bit fed up sometimes. You can get tired of the birds and butterflies. What say you and I go for a little picnic on our own one day?"
"We'll have to see about that," said Molly gaily. "I'll be looking forward to it." With a light laugh, she escaped and went back into the bar.
"Hello, Molly," said Tim. "You seem in a hurry. Who's that you've been with out there?"
He peered out. "Gregory Dyson."
"What does he want?"
"Wanted to make a pass at me," said Molly.
"Blast him," said Tim.
"Don't worry," said Molly. "I can do all the blasting necessary." Tim started to answer her, caught sight of Fernando, and went over to him, shouting out some directions. Molly slipped away through the kitchen, out through the kitchen door, and down the steps to the beach. Gregory Dyson swore under his breath. Then he walked slowly back in the direction of his bungalow. He had nearly got there when a voice spoke to him from the shadow of one of the bushes. He turned his head, startled. In the gathering dusk, he thought for a moment that it was a ghostly figure that stood there. Then he laughed. It had looked like a faceless apparition, but that was because, though the dress was white, the face was black. Victoria stepped out of the bushes onto the path.
"Mr. Dyson, please?"
"Yes, what is it?"
Ashamed of being startled, he spoke with a touch of impatience.
"I brought you this, sir."
She held out her hand. In it was a bottle of tablets.
"This belongs to you, doesn't it? Yes?"
"Oh, my bottle of serenite tablets. Yes, of course. Where did you find it?"
"I found it where it had been put, in the gentleman's room."
"What do you mean, in the gentleman's room?"
"The gentleman who is dead," she added gravely. "I do not think he sleeps very well in his grave."
"Why the devil not?" asked Dyson.
Victoria stood, looking at him.
"I still don't know what you're talking about. You mean you found this bottle of tablets in Major Palgrave's bungalow?"
"That is right, yes.
After the doctor and the Jamestown people go away, they give me all the things in his bathroom to throw away. The toothpaste and the lotions and all the other things, including this.
Well, why didn't you throw it away?
Because these are yours. You missed them. You remember? You asked me about them.
Yes. Well, yes, I did. I thought I'd just mislaid them.
No, you did not mislay them. They were taken from your bungalow and put in Major Palgrave's bungalow.
How do you know?
He spoke roughly. I know. I saw. She smiled at him in a sudden flash of white teeth. Someone put them in the dead gentleman's room. Now I give them back to you.
Here. Wait, what do you mean? What? Who did you see?
She hurried away back into the darkness of the bushes. Greg made as if to move after her, and then stopped. He stood stroking his chin.
What's the matter, Greg? Seen a ghost?
Asked Mrs. Dyson as she came along the path from their bungalow.
Thought I had for a minute or two.
Who was that you were talking to?
The colored girl who does our place. Victoria, her name is, isn't it?
What did she want? Making a pass at you?
Don't be stupid, Lucky. That girl's got some idiotic idea into her head.
Idea about what?
You remember I couldn't find my serenite the other day?
You said you couldn't.
What do you mean I said I couldn't?
Oh, for heck's sake. Have you got to take me up on everything?
I'm sorry, said Greg. Everybody goes about being so damn mysterious.
He held out his hand with the bottle in it.
That girl brought them back to me.
Had she pinched them?
No, she found them somewhere, I think.
Well, what of it? What's the mystery about?
Oh, nothing, said Greg. She just riled me, that's all.
Look here, Greg. What is this stuff all about? Come along and have a drink before dinner.
Molly had gone down to the beach. She pulled out one of the old basket chairs, one of the more rickety ones that was seldom used. She sat in it for a while, looking at the sea. Then suddenly she dropped her head in her hands and burst into tears. She sat there, sobbing unrestrainedly for some time. Then she heard a rustle close by her and glanced up sharply to see Mrs. Hillingdon looking down at her.
Hello, Evelyn. I didn't hear you. I'm sorry.
What's the matter, child? Said Evelyn. Something gone wrong?
She pulled another chair forward and sat down.
Tell me.
There's nothing wrong, said Molly.
Nothing at all. Of course there is. You wouldn't sit here and cry for nothing. Can't you tell me?
Is it some trouble between you and Tim? Oh, no.
I'm glad of that. You always look so happy together.
Not more than you do, said Molly. Tim and I always think how wonderful it is that you and Edward should seem so happy together after being married so many years.
Oh, that, said Evelyn.
Her voice was sharp as she spoke, but Molly hardly noticed.
People bicker so, she said, and have such rows. Even if they're quite fond of each other, they still seem to have rows and not to mind a bit whether they have them in public or not.
Some people like living that way, said Evelyn. It doesn't really mean anything.
Well, I think it's horrid, said Molly.
So do I, really, said Evelyn.
But to see you and Edward...
Oh, it's no good, Molly. I can't let you go on thinking things of that kind.
Edward and I... She paused. If you want to know the truth, we've hardly said a word to each other in private for the last 3 years.
What? Molly stared at her, appalled. I can't believe it.
Oh, we both put up quite a good show, said Evelyn. We're neither of us the kind that like having rows in public. And anyway, there's nothing really to have a row about.
But what went wrong? Asked Molly.
Just the usual.
What do you mean by the usual? Another...
Yes, another woman in the case. And I don't suppose it would be difficult for you to guess who the woman is.
Do you mean Mrs. Dyson? Lucky?
Evelyn nodded.
I know they always flirt together a lot, said Molly. But I thought that was just...
Just high spirits, said Evelyn. Nothing behind it.
But why...
Molly paused and tried again. But didn't you... Oh, I mean... Well, I suppose I oughtn't to ask.
Ask anything you like, said Evelyn. I'm tired of never saying a word, tired of being a well-bred, happy wife. Edward just lost his head completely about Lucky. He was stupid enough to come and tell me about it. It made him feel better, I suppose. Truthful, honourable, all that sort of stuff. It didn't occur to him to think that it wouldn't make me feel better.
Did he want to leave you?
Evelyn shook her head. We've got two children, you know, she said. Children whom we're both very fond of. They're at school in England. We didn't want to break up the home. And then, of course, Lucky didn't want a divorce either. Greg's a very rich man. His first wife left a lot of money. So we agreed to live and let live. Edward and Lucky in happy immorality, Greg in blissful ignorance, and Edward and I just good friends. She spoke with scalding bitterness.
How can you bear it?
One gets used to anything. But sometimes...
Yes, said Molly.
Sometimes I'd like to kill that woman. The passion behind her voice startled Molly. Oh, don't let's talk any more about me, said Evelyn. Let's talk about you. I want to know what's the matter.
Molly was silent for some moments, and then she said, It's only that I think there's something wrong about me.
Wrong? What do you mean?
Molly shook her head unhappily. I'm frightened, she said. I'm terribly frightened.
Frightened of what?
Everything, said Molly. It's growing on me. Voices in the bushes, footsteps, or things that people say. As though someone were watching me all the time, spying on me. Somebody hates me. That's what I keep feeling. Somebody hates me.
My dear child. Evelyn was shocked and startled.
How long has this been going on? I don't know. It started by degrees, and there have been other things too.
What sort of things?
There are times, said Molly slowly, that I can't account for, that I can't remember.
Do you mean you have blackouts, that sort of thing?
I suppose so. I mean, sometimes it's... Oh, say it's 5 o'clock, and I can't remember anything since about 1:30 or 2.
Oh, my dear, but that's just that you've been asleep, had a doze.
No, said Molly, it's not like that at all, because, you see, at the end of the time, it's not as though I'd just dozed off. I'm in a different place. Sometimes I'm wearing different clothes, and sometimes I seem to have been doing things, even saying things to people, talking to someone, and not remembering that I've done so.
Evelyn looked shocked. But, Molly, my dear, if this is so, then you ought to see a doctor.
I won't see a doctor. I don't want to. I wouldn't go near a doctor.
Evelyn looked sharply down into her face. Then she took the girl's hand in hers. You may be frightening yourself for nothing, Molly. You know, there are all kinds of nervous disorders that aren't really serious at all. A doctor would soon reassure you.
He mightn't. He might say that there was something really wrong with me.
Why should there be anything wrong with you?
Because... Molly spoke and then was silent. No reason, I suppose, she said.
Couldn't your family... Haven't you any family, any mother or sisters or someone who could come out here?
I don't get on with my mother. I never have. I've got sisters. They're married, but I suppose they could come if I wanted them. But I don't want them. I don't want anyone except Tim.
Does Tim know about this? Have you told him?
Not really, said Molly. But he's anxious about me, and he watches me. It's as though he were trying to help me or to shield me. But if he does that, it means I want shielding, doesn't it?
I think a lot of it may be imagination, but I still think you ought to see a doctor.
Old Dr. Graham? He wouldn't be any good.
There are other doctors on the island.
It's all right, really, said Molly. I just mustn't think of it. I expect, as you say, it's all imagination. Good gracious, it's getting frightfully late. I ought to be on duty now in the dining room. I must go back."
She looked sharply and almost offensively at Evelyn Hillingdon and then hurried off. Evelyn stared after her. Chapter 12. Old Sins Cast Long Shadows.
"I think I'm on to something, man."
"What's that you say, Victoria?"
"I think I'm on to something. It may mean big money. Big money."
"Now look, girl, you be careful you'll not tangle yourself up in something. Maybe I'd better tackle what it is."
Victoria laughed a deep, rich chuckle.
"You wait and see," she said. "I know how to play this hand. It's money, man. It's big money. Something I see and something I guess. I think I guess right."
And again, the soft, rich chuckle rolled out on the night.
"Evelyn?"
"Yes?"
Evelyn Hillingdon spoke mechanically, without interest. She did not look at her husband.
"Evelyn, would you mind if we chucked all this and went home to England?"
She had been combing her short, dark hair. Now her hands came down from her head sharply. She turned towards him.
"You mean, but we've only just come. We've not been out here in the islands for more than 3 weeks."
"I know, but would you mind?"
Her eyes searched his incredulously.
"You really want to go back to England? Back home?"
"Yes."
"Leaving Lucky?"
He winced.
"You've known all the time, I suppose, that it was still going on."
"Pretty well, yes."
"You've never said anything?"
"Why should I? We had the whole thing out years ago. Neither of us wanted to make a break, so we agreed to go our separate ways, but keep up the show in public."
Then she added, before he could speak, "But why are you so set on going back to England now?"
"Because I'm at breaking point. I can't stick at it any longer, Evelyn. I can't."
The quiet Edward Hillingdon was transformed. His hands shook. He swallowed. His calm, unemotional face seemed distorted by pain.
"For God's sake, Edward, what's the matter?"
"Nothing's the matter, except that I want to get out of here."
"You fell wildly in love with Lucky, and now you've got over it. Is that what you're telling me?"
"Yes." "I don't suppose you'll ever feel the same."
"Oh, let's not go into that now. I want to understand what's upsetting you so much, Edward."
"I'm not particularly upset."
"But you are. Why?"
"Isn't it obvious?"
"No, it isn't," said Evelyn. "Let's put it in plain concrete terms. You've had an affair with a woman. That happens often enough. And now it's over. Or isn't it over? Perhaps it isn't over on her side. Is that it? Does Greg know about it? I've often wondered."
"I don't know," said Edward. "He's never said anything. He always seems friendly enough."
"Men can be extraordinarily obtuse," said Evelyn thoughtfully. "Or else, perhaps Greg has got an outside interest of his own."
"He's made passes at you, hasn't he?" said Edward. "Answer me, I know he has."
"Oh, yes," said Evelyn carelessly. "But he makes passes at everybody. That's just Greg. It doesn't ever really mean much, I imagine. That's just part of the Greg He-Man act."
"Do you care for him, Evelyn? I'd rather know the truth."
"Greg? I'm quite fond of him. He amuses me. He's a good friend."
"And that's all? I wish I could believe you."
"I can't really see how it can possibly matter to you," said Evelyn dryly.
"I suppose I deserve that."
Evelyn walked to the window, looked out across the veranda, and came back again.
"I wish you would tell me what's really upsetting you, Edward."
"I've told you."
"I wonder."
"You can't understand, I suppose, how extraordinary a temporary madness of this kind can seem to you after you've got over it."
"I can try, I suppose. But what's worrying me now is that Lucky seems to have got some kind of strange hold upon you. She's not just a discarded mistress. She's a tigress with claws. You must tell me the truth, Edward. It's the only way if you want me to stand by you."
Edward said
in a low voice, "If I don't get away from her soon, I shall kill her."
Kill Lucky? Why?
Because of what she made me do.
What did she make you do?
I helped her to commit a murder. The words were out.
There was silence. Evelyn stared at him. Do you know what you're saying?
Yes. I didn't know I was doing it. There were things she asked me to get for her at the chemist's. I didn't know. I hadn't the least idea what she wanted them for. She got me to copy out a prescription she had.
When was this?
4 years ago, when we were in Martinique, when Greg's wife...
You mean Greg's first wife, Gail?